You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
What is up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is a balmy summer-like Thursday afternoon. I hope each and every one of you have an opportunity to get outside and enjoy this Indian summer that we seem to be enjoying, or a First Nation people's summer, as it were. I know I'm going to try to get out there after the show, but you're not going to want to go anywhere where you cannot hear this show, because we have a fantastic lineup for all of you today. I'm excited, as I hope each and every one of you are, because my good friend, one of the most reasonable men in politics, Tom Paulswitz, a two-time congressional candidate, a reasonable Democrat, a centrist Democrat who ran in a deep blue Waukesha congressional district, joins me every Thursday. Tom is here today. Also at 3 o'clock, we've of course got Maggie and the Millionaires, and today is quite special. I am going to be joined by an internationally renowned economist by the name of Jyoti Ghosh. She has taught economics at the University of Nehru in New Delhi. She is currently a professor of economics at UMass Amherst, and in 2021, the UN named her to be on the High-Level Advisory Board on Economic and Social Affairs. This very smart woman has written 19 books, and she'll be continuing our discussion today about global power and wealth inequality and how destabilizing this is from a geopolitical sense, but also from a democratic sense. You're not going to want to miss that discussion. And finally, as today is Thursday at 3:30, I will be joined by the candidate, the woman with the mostest, Dr. Kristen Lierley, candidate for the 8th Congressional District in Wisconsin. We'll have a fantastic discussion with Kristen. I can't wait, because, you know, there's been nothing going on in the news about women's reproductive rights or anything. But Tom, you and I have been working so that on these days when you join me, you set the agenda and less me, because I think folks want to hear as much from you as they do me, perhaps even a little bit more. That is why you are here. Sir, welcome back. And where would you like to start today?
Yeah, it's as usual, it's my pleasure to be here. And I am thrilled for you about the rest of the lineup. I think, though, like as usual, nothing much happened since we last talked on Thursday. But I want to broach two subjects. One is just what's happening in New York City with Mayor Eric Adams. Yeah. And then really talk about the America First agenda and how that really is at opposition to what the Biden administration and the Harris administration have been working on diligently for the last 4 years. So those are the two big things. So why don't we jump into Eric Adams? Maggie, you know, you being the attorney, you know, when someone says, you know, that this is just the weaponization of the judiciary and there's absolutely no way that any of this is true, what's your first thought when you hear those words coming out of someone who's just been indicted?
Yeah, they probably did it. because you're not addressing the merits of the charges against you. Right. And I've been last night laying in bed. I saw the headline breaking. Now, there had been reporting over about the last 8 months that there were some investigations ongoing related to Mayor Adams, that some of this may have to do with the Turkish government and a building that they wanted built. And it seemed sort of this dirty underbelly of something that has, I mean, if we're being candid here, plagued New York City New York and New Jersey politics since time in memoriam.
Not just New York, but how many other elements, right? New Jersey's working through their problems. You've got Chicago, you've got, you know, the rest of Illinois. I mean, it's not as if it's strictly just one party in this sense.
Yeah, Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois. I mean, but these charges are broad.
Yes.
And fairly, not fairly, extraordinarily serious. He was charged this morning with bribery, wire fraud, and seeking illegal campaign donations, apparently a multi-year cataloging of crimes from what prosecutors called his, quote, corrupt relationships with rich foreigners. The fact that it was a foreign country, and we also have the senator from New Jersey, Bob Menendez, who was just convicted of these foreign entanglements. I think it's an interesting table setter, Tom, to some of the meta context of what we'll talk about in a few minutes. But as I sat up in bed and was, oh my gosh, Eric Adams is going to get arrested, right? This is going to happen to a sitting mayor of New York City, the largest metropolitan area and city in the country. I started to read some of his comments because he started to immediately put out some statements. And I thought, what are you doing, man? Now, this is very much in line with who Eric Adams has been throughout the entirety of his political career. This is not his first investigation. When he was a state senator, he was investigated. He's been known as the bravado mayor. He basically ran on that.
He has self-proclaimed swagger.
Yes, which is like, isn't swag, I don't know, people out there, if you're listening, isn't swag and having swag or riz something that like someone else has to decide for? You don't self-proclaim like I got the riz and the swag. Right. Like someone has to say you have that.
You would expect such, yes.
But this is pretty incredible. And his responses sound like Donald Trump. And so I think that impulse towards sort of ego-driven, non-substantive rebuttal of very serious charges is not one that's unique to Republicans.
Yes.
Right? That is the response I think of people sometimes when they are in serious hot water. We saw this from Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor, basically of New York, kind of saying, that's not me. This, you know, and just completely failing to address the issues. We, in fact, saw this from the former city attorney in the city of Milwaukee.
Yes.
Who was basically in turmoil since the first moment he took office and was voted out after a single term. He blamed the media. He blamed his staff. He blamed racism. He blamed everything else. And you see Eric Adams engaging the same. What was your initial reaction, Tom?
Well, first off, corruption is it's in everything we do. And, as a society, we have to work toward removing it because corruption creates doubt. It creates doubt in the voter's mind. And it also creates that idea that both parties are the same. See, every politician is corrupt. Mm-hmm. And when I ran, I would run into people who would say that to me. And I'd go, wait a minute, that's just not true. Because I know lots of politicians, including myself, who are not corrupt.
Yeah.
But it just creates that doubt. But the other one is when you're indicted, if you're an innocent person, you know, because I've been on the other side of a lawsuit. When you're an innocent person, I've always felt like you can't wait to tell your side of the story. You can't wait to explain what really happened. And I just don't sense that. And when I read these clips of what people are saying, you can almost assume that, yes, definitely they did it. Because they're talking about, you know, somebody else is creating some kind of weaponization or somebody else is driving this for political reasons. And everybody knows that it's just not true, that there is corruption. So to me, it's very disappointing, though, because it continues to happen. But it's not just Eric Adams. It's his staff. There are other people around him who fed into this. And this is the part that really is what we need to work on, is there are these people who think that because political power needs to be wielded, that the ends justify the means.
Yeah, it just a short listening of, there's a number of top level officials in Eric Adams' mayoral staff that are under investigation, but the New York Police Department commissioner has resigned. He and his brother, I apologies to all you listening. I don't know if they've actually been charged or if they're just under investigation. The investigation has been publicly announced. That's the police commissioner that Adams selected.
Yes.
Two fire chiefs have resigned. I mean, this is at the very highest levels of New York government, New York City government. And again, we mentioned Senator Menendez, Governor Cuomo left the state house in the governor's mansion under a criminal cloud. We've got Bridgegate, Chris Christie in New Jersey. Of course, Rudy Giuliani going down in a ball of flames. We got Anthony Weiner. Here's one of the things that I think is really interesting. While some federal elected officials from that area have not yet called for Adams' resignation, nearly universally amongst Democrats involved in local politics in New York, they are all calling for his resignation. Yes. And it was almost immediate.
Yes.
Even while putting out his entitlement to a presumption of innocence, they said, you can't govern and defend yourself against charges that are this serious. It's just not going to be effective for the people of New York. And I think that there's a difference. Democrats clean house when this stuff happens.
Yes.
Republicans wrap their arms around
them. And voters should demand this. Voters should demand that people resign when they're indicted and fight the charges. And if the charges aren't true, you can come back to whatever public office you want on another day. But you should not be leading or governing while under indictment. To me, it does not make any sense.
Folks, what do you all think? And certainly the prospect of a chief executive officer in our national government that promises revenge and retribution and has promised to weaponize the Department of Justice may make Tom's thesis a little troubling. Should elected officials resign when they are indicted? What do you think, everybody? 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Should elected officials resign if they're under indictment? Why or why not? I tend to agree with you, Tom.
It just makes sense, right?
You've got like vice popes, right? You've got lieutenant governors and these other people.
You have independent grand juries. You have other people deciding whether these charges should be brought or not. And if there's enough evidence, then go back and fight those charges. And if you win, great. You'll be exonerated and you'll come back to another day.
As they say, show us the receipts. My special guest host this hour, Tom Paulswitz. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, folks, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. More in just a moment. Hey, I'm going to keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. Not to be a bad, bad girl, but you know, sometimes I may make you a little mad, but that just makes it great radio, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a special guest host. You can hear from him every Thursday. He's two-time congressional candidate in the 5th Congressional District, Tom Paulswitz, former small business owner today, and Navy veteran. Welcome back, Tom. We've been talking about these charges against Eric Adams before the break. New York City Mayor Eric Adams. The charges are, again, vast. They date back to before he was in office. They extend into this year, actions that were undertaken by the mayor this year. They involve basically like taking bribes from a foreign country is a way to put it. And you posited before the break that, listen, if these very high level officials are charged with, are indicted by a grand jury that they should step down, that in general, this should be an expectation from voters. And I said, yeah, I generally tend to agree, especially if the indictment relates to conduct that is relevant to your function as an elected official, especially for chief executive officer elected officials, folks, I mean, mayors, governors, the president and the like, county executives, that sort of thing. But Tom, and folks, we want to hear from you as well. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Tom, any qualifications you want to put on that, given the specter of potentially a second Donald Trump term?
Yeah, I would say what you just mentioned, right? If it was something that you're indicted for while you were doing the job that you've been elected to do, absolutely, definitely, you should step down from that job. It gets a little grayer outside of that, but if it's pertaining to either you running for that position, right, or you, whatever's involved with that position in general, yes, you should not be really looking to either move into that position, campaigning for, and if you are in that position, step down. And those to me seemed, I mean, there's a lot of gray area, but that seems fairly cut and dry to me that this should be the way we do it. And I think Democrats generally have done that. You know, I think the last two instances, Bob Menendez, and like we've talked about, and then Eric Adams now, there's been some resistance because they've also found that they can keep raising money from people who believe they're innocent. And it's just one more way to grift on the way out.
Yeah, there is. I forget who is. It might have been you, Tom, but we were reflecting on the fact that running for office, because of the weakness of the Federal Election Commission,
yes,
provides an almost unchecked, nearly unlimited ability to enrich oneself. And once you're charged, even more so. Ron from Poinette, what do you think, sir? Should politicians that have been indicted relating to their work in office or how they got there step down? Should that be an expectation?
Yes. And another question I had, why is it politicians, when they go in, get elected and stuff, they don't have a lot of money, but when they come out, they're millionaires? I'm just curious. How does that happen all the time?
Ron, that is a great question. I have some very specific answers, but Tom, as my guest host, I'll let you take Ron's question first.
I think it's a great question. My wife and I were literally just talking about this today. There are a number of ways to legally make money while you are in office, including an element of, you know, knowing what's happening across the board when it comes to different companies that you could invest in from a stock market standpoint. When you leave office, you can get hired as a lobbyist or work as a consultant for companies. You know, it's almost infuriating to see officials making money illegally while they're in office when there are so many different ways to make money outside.
Legally.
Yes, tons of ways to
why
do it legally.
Why?
Right? Why would you put yourself, you know, maybe in the crosshairs of the legal system? Just do what everyone else does. I think it's too wide though. Becoming a lobbyist after working in government, there should be a cooling off period between that. But we see it happen all the time.
Well, Ron, a couple of very specific answers to your question, and it's things. Some of this stuff has bothered me for years. I've worked on the inside of government. I've been a chief legal officer to just jurisdiction. But let's be clear, campaign finance laws very loose.
Yes.
So that is one avenue of enrichment. Most of the time, when you look at local political scandals, what you see are elected officials that mix or take from their political campaign war chest and use it for things that are absolutely clearly personal expenses.
Yes.
Now, what that's not showing you, Ron, is that there is this vast expanse of gray area expenses that law enforcement officials won't even get into because the campaign finance laws are so wishy-washy, right? So there's a lot that can be done with campaign fundraising. Folks can get paid to make speeches on occasion. And here's one of the big ones. And I'll tell you, when you see local elected officials, and I'm gonna throw some shade here at some Democrats, people might get mad at me, but before the maps were fixed in the state of Wisconsin, there was like this steady stream of local Democrats that would go to become state senators in our state legislature or state assembly people. And I often wondered, why are they doing that? Because Democrats have absolutely zero power in state government. I'll tell you why they were doing it. even in the state assembly, where their annual salary is lower than it was to be a common council member in the city of Milwaukee, their per diem and their travel and expense budget was big. And so there is a whole, basically you can kind of finance a kind of jet setty lifestyle as an elected official, because you can basically bill back travel and expense for your quote official activities. And listen, people, that is pretty vague. It can be extremely broad, and it is not a partisan question.
Well, Maggie, and I'll jump in and say, to be fair, it's still not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And but I also would say that there were some members who lived very close to Madison who somehow were able to get that per diem on a regular basis.
Maxing their per diem.
Yes. But still, it's still a drop in the bucket compared to these other things that elected officials, once they leave office, could get paid for.
Ron, the last one I'll mention to you are the book deals in the private sector.
Yes.
As soon as you leave office, those are big money makers. Folks, Karina, Mark, if you're on the line, stay there. We'll take your calls when we come back. Our conversation continues with my special co-host, Tom Polzowitz. We'll talk about the risks of the America First agenda when we return on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break your walls. All you ever did was wreck me. Yeah, you
welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy, beautiful Thursday afternoon, folks. Boy, do we have a great show for you today. Tom Polzowitz with me in the 3 o'clock hour as a fabulous co-host. We've got Maggie and the Millionaires, of course, coming up at three. And then stick around, because Dr. Kristen Lierley, candidate for the 8th Congressional District, will be talking to me this afternoon about what I'm just going to call those pesky double standards. Certainly seems to me like female candidates held to quite a different standard than men. I've also experienced that in my life as a lawyer.
Yes.
Curious if Kristen experienced it in her profession as well. We'll talk about all of that. But Tom, we've been talking about Eric Adams and whether or not elected officials, when they're indicted for crimes relating to their role as an elected official, whether
yes.
during their campaigns or in elected office, should resign. We got a couple of callers wanting to weigh in on this. Karina
Perfect.
From Milwaukee, always nice to hear from you. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Hello. Well, I have a question before I can educate other education person answer that. Would people like this have like vice presidents or something like that? Because we should think about a presumption of innocence. Otherwise, we have no democracy. We're going to just slide down into the Middle Ages and not to have, even though everybody, 99%, I'm sure they did it, but it should have a process to prove that he did it. And at the same time, then, okay, if he didn't do it, then he come back, and how we're going to do that? We already fired him once. We're going to rehire him. Wouldn't be better to have like people who's the right-hand vice president start doing it and wait until we have a result
Yeah, that's really interesting, Karina. Let me just quick take the first part, and then Tom, I'd love you to answer sort of her second portion of the question. First, Karina, most, and I would believe almost all jurisdictions have an order of succession, meaning
yes.
if the chief elected officer, so a mayor, a governor, a president, a county executive, becomes incapacitated, resigns, or otherwise leaves office, or is impeached and removed, there is an order of succession. There's a person that is designated by typically the charters or constitutions of those jurisdictions to take over. But your point about the presumption of innocence, very important. We believe in due process here. And I think Tom and I, for the most part, are talking about, oh, gee, remember when things were normal and we could rely on grand juries and a legal process and investigators to act in an unbiased, objective, nonpartisan, apolitical way when investigating crimes. Karina, I share your concern. We only need to look back to the last Trump administration. There were a number of officials that, despite objections from White House counsel Don McGahn and others who tried to dissuade Trump from basically sicking the Federal Department of Justice on some of his enemies, he was able to do so anyways. And here's the important part, Karina. These people weren't elected officials. They were working within the governmental bureaucracy. And the four people, and maybe I'll do a whole show on these folks, the four people that were targeted by Trump and that eventually the DOJ went after, not a single one of them was ever convicted of anything that they were charged with in a couple instances. And in the other instances, there were no charges. So that's the concern. Tom, what do you say to Karina's points?
Yeah, I think, well, the distinction you made is very important, right? Is if there are no charges, it's a different subject. But I think the point you make is very relevant, that there needs to be a mechanism where it's a temporary step down until after some kind of trial. And that makes a lot of sense to me, that there would be some mechanism to say, all right, but you should step away from your official duties. You should step away from being able to wield power, so to speak, until that thing has been, whatever it's been, that's been handled in a way that creates a pathway for either that person to come back into office or be removed from office. But I agree with you, Maggie. There usually are succession plans in place, and there's ways to do that. But I think it's an excellent point. I'm prone to think that if grand juries end up indicting, that there's probably something going on.
There's also this old line amongst especially DAs and federal prosecutors that you can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich, which makes the couple of people that Trump targeted for investigation by the DOJ that weren't ever indicted
right.
A very interesting yes. Counterpoint there.
Right.
Mark from Prairie to Sac, what do you have to say this afternoon?
Yeah, since all our elected officials, you know, high and lower, are all required to take an oath of office, you know, swearing allegiance to the constitutions, including that of the United States, it gets to the point where I firmly believe that anybody who was in that kind of office, including probably a couple of our Supreme Court justices, were aware of the fake electors conspiracy that was going on, and that they should have denounced it. I mean, Ron Johnson should have denounced it rather than participating in it. You know, we got Tom Tiffany now complaining about. You know, some ballots that were sent out in duplicate and, you know, trying to make hay out of that. And I'd maintain that how many of our Wisconsin politicians were actually aware of the fake elector conspiracy, including Bob Spindell, who actually should not have been eligible to be a elector anyway because he holds a position of public trust, which I believe under trust or profit under the United States, which I believe under Article 2 of the Constitution that describes elector qualifications for electors, that if you hold a position of trust or public profit, that you aren't qualified.
You can't
to be an
elector. It's
yes.
A really, all of this, the particularities around who can be electors for the purposes of the Electoral College, Mark, is a really interesting point. He's referring to the fact that Bob Spindell was on the Wisconsin Election Commission and was an elector and signed the fake elector thing. And by the way, Bob Spindell, still on the Wisconsin Elections Commission.
Yes.
Your thoughts?
Well, to start with, I think everyone involved, you know, they really were working, and Maggie, you and I have had this conversation, they were working against norms, not necessarily working against laws. And the hard part is trying to find the laws that they broke and then be able to indict them for those laws. Presenting a fake set of electors should be against the law any way you look at it, but it seems to be a fairly gray area. You know, but I know for certain that the guy I ran against last time for Congress in 2020, Scott Fitzgerald, reserved the room for the fake electors. He was part of it. And it's
facilitating a conspiracy. Yes.
Right. And there's no mention of it. There's no, you know, and the fascinating thing about that whole thing is you will not see one elected official who was elected in 2020 say that their race was somehow impacted by this fraud. It was only at the highest level of the presidency. Every other race was absolutely fantastic. So,
well, and to close out this conversation, Tom, or this discussion, here's what the idea that Karina and others have pointed out, maybe the nuanced view here is if you're indicted again in a time and a place where we don't have a weaponized Department of Justice, right, where it's not politically motivated, it's not score settling, and that indictment relates to your duties or how you got into office, that there should be an expectation that someone steps back. And here's the thing that's always bugged me about Trump. If I were Donald Trump, if I were Eric Adams, if I were Mark Robinson, first of all, I never would have said or done any of these things, A, but B,
correct. Yes.
If I was genuinely believed in my innocence, I would be trying to put forward evidence of my innocence and I would be demanding the speediest trial you could think of.
Yes.
I would want the evidence against me to be brought into public light. I would want the public to see it. I would want to counter it. I would want to take the stand. And the fact that Donald Trump never pushed for that. Senator Menendez's scandal came out years
well after.
Right, January 6th and all of this stuff.
He's already been convicted.
Done.
Yeah. Right.
Out of office, trial done, spending some time in federal prison. Yeah, check. But the idea of a speedy trial was created in our Constitution for precisely this. This is the most extreme example, but I think it's an apt one.
Right. But it's also going back to if you are innocent, you want a speedy trial so you can get back to your life and do what you believe is the right thing to do. Right. But once again, that's what we're hearing across the board is people saying it's a weaponization of the justice system and they're going to delay.
Which is dumb, and probably means you did it.
Yes, absolutely.
Turning the page, Tom, you and I stumbled upon a conversation that seems to be front and center, and I think seems to have, distracted some voters, and that is this idea of America First requiring an isolationist foreign policy stance. This Trump line about sort of withdrawing from NATO and pulling back from support for Ukraine. And you and I both receive the Substack that's called Letters from an American. It's written by historian Heather Cox Richardson, who, folks, she is the number one Substack in the world.
Yes.
She is going to be on my show tomorrow. Mark your calendars, Heather Cox Richardson, tomorrow on my show along with Senator Tammy Baldwin. Don't miss it. But we both read one of her recent pieces, and Tom, you wanted to share some thoughts and engage a conversation here.
Yeah, and it was great because this is the week that Joe Biden is in New York to address the UN and really talk about what it means to be a partner across the globe. You know, and we as a society, we've moved from the industrial age to now we're entering the technological age. Mm-hmm. And what that means is there are more things that cross borders than used to be.
Right.
And, you know, in an agricultural age, there weren't too many things that crossed borders. You could keep everything within your own borders. But now trade crosses borders, climate crosses borders, people cross borders, money crosses borders, technology crosses borders. Like, you can do things from anywhere in the world to combat any other country on the planet. And this idea that there's this way for us to be able to pull back and say, let's just take care of our own and ignore the rest of the world, is part of the populism that Donald Trump is feeding people. And it sounds good. It sounds interesting. You know, but in Heather Cox Richardson's article, it was 2 days ago, she basically said Biden was talking about the world, and he quoted Yeats saying, "Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world." And Biden had to remind people, in our time, the center has held. And what he means by that is the the reasonable people across the world have come back together and said, wait a minute, there are things that are going to impact all of us if we don't work together. You know, that being Ukraine, that being what's going on in the Middle East right now. And it was Biden there to remind people to be optimistic that the center has held in times of crisis. And one of the reasons I really like Heather Cox Richardson, because she does a great job of putting things in a historical perspective. Usually what's going on has happened at some other point in the history of our country. And you don't have to look too far back. Right after World War One, you know, trying to get into World War One, there were a whole bunch of people in this country who were adamantly opposed to making that happen. But after that, it was after the World War, everybody wanted to go back to just being part of their own countries. And it wasn't surprising that anarchy reigned and Hitler came to power.
I'd like, Aaron, if we can we take sound cut number 2.4? This is right after Biden quoted Yates and this concept of things falling apart and the center cannot hold and anarchy is loosed upon our world. Here's what President Biden had to say.
Our test is to make sure that the forces holding us together are stronger than those who are pulling us apart.
And he goes on to say that the principles of partnership that we came here each year to uphold can withstand the challenges and that the center holds once again. He identified and acknowledged that there will always be forces that pull our countries apart and the world apart. Aggression, extremism, chaos, and cynicism, a desire to retreat from the world and go it alone. This is not medieval Europe, right? There aren't fiefdoms. We can't just look at what's internal and ignore the external because it comes for us all, right? More on this with my very special guest host in this 3 o'clock hour, Mr. Tom Paulswitz, two-time congressional candidate. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What do you think of the threat of isolationism that Donald Trump is pitching to voters here on the Civic Media Radio Network? Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Thursday, everybody. Happy Friday Eve. And it's always fun to be joined by one of the most reasonable men in politics, Tom Paulswitz, small business owner, Navy veteran, and former two-time congressional candidate in the 5th CD, a glutton for punishment, as it were.
And a Brewer fan who would like to note the Brewers won 5-2 today, and we got to keep saying it because there might not be too much time left in the season, but they're still winning.
It has been amazing. And we also, I mean, just to talk about the crew for a second, Tom, thanks so much. You know, I always talk about baseball. You got Churio and Adames that had 2020 seasons.
Yes.
That has never happened in Brewers history.
Right.
Not once. And folks, if you're not a nerd about baseball, by 2020, I mean at least 20 home runs and at least 20 stolen bases, which of course is a feat. But then you're thinking of Shohei Ohtani's 50-50 season,
yes,
and suddenly you're like, oh, they're not Superman.
Unbelievable, right? Just a phenomenal thing. And, it, you know, if memory serves me right, I was at the game that Ricky Henderson broke Lou Brock's record.
Yeah.
Which was another magnificent season. But
yes, indeed. I'm going to the game on Friday, and I'm going
Excellent.
To the game on Sunday. I always kind of load up on late season tickets just in case, right? They're in a runoff to make the playoffs.
Yes.
It's nice to also go when I can just relax and I don't have to worry about the game.
And it's going to be beautiful weather too.
Yes.
So hopefully the roof will be open and everybody will be having a great time.
Go crew. But again, returning to our much more serious discussion,
yes,
about Donald Trump's pitch of isolationism, I have so much empathy and sympathy, Tom, for people who, middle class folks who are struggling, and they hear about billions in aid, and it's an easy leap to conclude, well, we shouldn't be providing aid. We need,
yes,
to take care of home first.
Yes.
But here's the thing. When we look back at the periods in American history where we took an isolationist stance, really bad things happened. And we began our discussion today by you rightly pointing out that the world is far more integrated today, and the countries are far more reliant on each other in both good ways and bad, I think,
yes,
in many respects, than they were in those times, and that the potential results of Donald Trump's proposed isolationist stance is like horrifyingly bad.
Yes.
And what comes to mind first and foremost, you know, was the strategy of appeasement that America adopted and that helped accelerate the spread of Nazism and led to a stinking world war. And I can't help but think, and again, I respect President Biden's optimistic tone before the UN, but that, holy cow, we stand at the precipice. That is a potential.
Yes. And I think what people don't realize is one of the most important parts of the president's job is foreign minister.
Yes.
Just understanding relationships around the world. You know, I look back on a speech I saw Joe Biden give at Tammy Baldwin's reelection in 2018. And he talked about what was happening in the world because of Donald Trump pulling back, the relationships that were being severed, the countries that were now looking to have to go on their own, what was happening with NATO. The impact around the world was actually very much scaring our allies that this was going to be the new America. And when Joe Biden was elected in 2020, it immediately turned all that around, and we became the leader in the world that we need to be, because like it or not, we are a leader in the world. But Maggie, there's a false equivalency that we can either take care of people at home or give aid to other countries, and it's just not true. We can do both. We have to have the will to do both, but we need to make our tax system fair in order to make sure we can pay for both.
Yeah, and we can do those things. Again, yes. I think not just false equivalency, but false choice. Aaron, if you're there, I know you're doing multiple things. I wanted to play you a little clip from a 1990 interview with Donald Trump. This is Barbara Walters interviewing Trump. I think it's both interesting because she doesn't let him off the hook, but also what this says about Donald Trump and how he would behave if given the reins of power again. Let's take a quick listen.
Well, the new book is entitled Surviving at the Top. There are many people who would say failing at the top.
I hope the general public understands how inherently dishonest the press in this country is.
As a member of the press, let me try to clear up some of the things which you say are untrue. You write in your book, my bankers and I worked out a terrific deal that allows me to come out stronger than ever. I see the deal as a great victory, and eventually the rest of the world will too. Being on the verge of bankruptcy, being bailed out by the banks, skating on thin ice, yeah, and almost drowning, that's a businessman to be admired.
You say on the verge of bankruptcy, Barbara, and you talk on the verge, and you listen to what people are saying.
I talk to your bankers.
Well, that's fine. And what do they say? I mean, you know, depending on which banker you're talking to, what do they say? I'm the only one people write about. I mean, they don't write about other people.
You have a little more debt than most people. You're something like $3 billion in debt.
I also have a little more assets than most people.
Okay. You have debts to pay back.
Right.
You have huge loans to pay back. You say the country is in a depression. What makes you think that you can pay back those loans? And further, what your bankers have told us is that the only way you even have a chance...
It goes on, and I may take more of that sound later in the show, but Tom, the question I wanted to pose to you is this. Isolationism, not a good idea. It's even more problematic when the guy that's steering our foreign policy cannot see things and the situation clearly or is incapable of communicating honestly.
Absolutely, and this is the big difference between the two campaigns.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it there. So much in that clip. Maybe we'll start there next week, Tom. So
sounds good.
To see. Thanks to Tom Paulswitz, two-time congressional candidate here hosting with me the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked, everybody. Maggie and the Millionaires coming up next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.